Robert Masur. Este agente lo entrevistamos cuando salió el libro y advertíamos entonces que esta sería una gran película. Y lo fue. La acaban de estrenar en los Estados Unidos bajo el mismo nombre, Los Infiltrados. La historia de Masur en esa época la contamos y la ratificamos con él. El señor Masur se infiltró en el cartel de Medellín, exactamente con la gente de Pablo Escobar. Pero fue más allá, también se metió con los carteles mexicanos y le dio el golpe más grande al bolsillo de los carteles en lo que tenía que ver con los bancos, con el lavado de dinero. El montaje que hizo fue absolutamente cinematográfico y espectacular. Y ahora su película es un éxito en Hollywood, El Infiltrado, basado en la historia que él vivió en un hecho que pasó hace un poco más de 30 años. Es un placer saludar a Robert Masur para hablar ahora, no del libro, sino de su película. Señor Masur, buenos días.
Good day.
Good day. La primera pregunta es si le gustó la película.
Mr. Mazur, thank you for joining us. You were infiltrated in the Medellin cartel for 18 months. You went ahead with one of the biggest operations the DEA ever set in its history. And today we greet you with our question, what did you think about the movie?
Well, you know, the movie is made to entertain. And my book is to offer my version of the truth. And so it's a difficult thing for me to compare, but I'm grateful that I had the chance to work closely with the director on the film and to give him as much insight as I could about what really occurred.
El señor Mazur nos cuenta que una cosa es la película, que la película está hecha para entretener, pero que, bueno, su libro, que es mucho más extenso, cuenta unos detalles mucho más exactos de lo que ocurrió, pero que igual trabajó muy de cerca con el director de la película para darle su opinión y su versión de lo que de verdad ocurrió.
En todas estas películas que están basadas en hechos de la vida real, en la mayoría al final sale la foto del actor y de la persona en la vida real. Y me llamó mucho la atención el parecido, por ejemplo, de su compañera, que es un agente de la DEA, con la que él hace todo el montaje de que era su novia, para meterse con esos capos del lavado de dinero. Y está, pues, la foto de él. Él, cuando se ve en el cine, siente que es él, se parece a él, el actor que lo interpretó.
Mr. Mazur, towards the end of usually movies that are based on real lives, and in this case as well, we see the pictures of the character, the real-life character, and the actor that played that character in the movie. There's a resemblance between the woman that played, who was supposed to be your fiancé in real life, but there is also a resemblance between you and the person who played you in the movie. What do you see yourself, basically, in this character that played you in the movie?
Well, Bryan Cranston played me, and Mr. Cranston is an unbelievably gifted, not just an actor, but a talent and a person who contributed tremendously to many layers of the film. He was involved in editing of the screenplay. He was involved in closely working with and developing a chemistry with the other actors in the film. There certainly are aspects of what he did that he learned from spending time with me. He spent quite a bit of time with me. But there certainly are some aspects of his behavior and his activities on the big screen that are a little bit different are certainly different than what I did.
Claro, Bryan Cranston, que es el actor que hizo el papel de Robert Mazur en la película, nos dice el señor Mazur que es increíblemente talentoso, no solamente como actor, sino como persona, que digamos era la pega que llevaba al resto de los actores a actuar como él. Brian también pasó un buen tiempo con Mr. Mazur, con el señor Mazur, para, digamos, descifrarlo como era su persona, y que mientras hay aspectos de él que sí son realmente exactos y él se ve reflejado ahí, también hay otros que son muy distintos.
La película muestra también el drama de su vida personal, que es la que le sucede a un hombre que está todo el tiempo arriesgando su vida. Él tenía unos hijos chiquitos, una señora encantadora, pero la señora sufría mucho porque él siempre le decía que esta era la última vez, la última misión, la última misión. Y nunca había última, había era penúltima, hasta que viene el gran golpe. ¿Cómo logra él proteger a su familia para que la mafia nunca la descubra y nunca, según la película y según el libro, nunca amenazaron a su señora y a sus hijos?
Mr. Mazur, and we see in your life story and in the movie how your wife was always asking you for this mission to be your last. And it never actually was your last, it was your second to last. But our main question is basically, how did you manage to protect your family? They never received a threat, basically, from the mafia. How did you manage to keep them safe? How did you keep them hidden from the mafia?
Well, I'm not going to go into personal security, but, you know, the risk that I faced is no different than the risk that many thousands of brave law enforcement officers in many countries face. There are many, many very much braver than me law enforcement officers in Colombia who have given their life for the fight to try to shine a light on this underworld. So, you know, I do the same type of thing that other people do, but I don't want to get into real specifics about any aspects of that.
El señor Mazur dice que por cuestiones de seguridad él no va a revelar esos detalles, pero que él considera que él no es el único que está en peligro también. Dice, mira, hay millones de personas, incluidas en Colombia, que arriesgan su vida cada día para poder, digamos que, alumbrar o ponerle un o revelar lo que está pasando aquí con el negocio del narcotráfico.
Pero él, después de meterle la mano al bolsillo a los Moncada, a los Moncaleano, a Pablo Escobar, a los mexicanos, ¿no se sorprende de estar hoy vivo?
Mr. Mazur, are you surprised that you are alive today, especially after, you know, you were a source of attack for the Moncadas, Pablo Escobar and his cartel, several Mexican cartels? Are you surprised at all that you are alive?
Not surprised that I'm alive. There have been many other agents who have done this type of work. Not many that had the opportunity to not only get inside the cartel, as I did, but also to get inside the international banks that were servicing them. And so, yes, there's some risk that relates to that, but am I surprised? Well, I was so focused at the time of the mission that I really didn't give a lot of consideration to the risks. I guess I would probably say that it must be similar for someone who is in the army or in the military on a battlefield, who stays very focused to give every 100% of their attention to what they're doing at the time. So I was so focused on my mission, I really didn't give as much thought to that issue as some people might think.
Robert Mazur está comparando su situación con un soldado que está en una guerra. Él dice que estaba totalmente enfocado en su misión en ese momento y que probablemente eso hizo que él no midiera los riesgos. Su enfoque era tal, él tenía una cierta confianza de que todo iba a salir bien, y hoy en día la verdad es que no está tan sorprendido de que esté vivo después de semejante cosa.
Yo entiendo que él no me vaya a dar ningún nombre de un policía colombiano, pero hace 30 años Pablo Escobar era el dueño de la policía, y la que no estaba con él estaba con el cartel de Cali. O sea, teníamos una crisis de institucionalidad en la policía. Sin que me dé el nombre, ¿él pudo confiar en algún policía colombiano para esta misión?
Mr. Mazur, In the 80s, Pablo Escobar owned the police in Colombia. It was either him or the cartel in Cali. We are wondering if you were ever able to trust anyone within the police in Colombia to undergo, to take part of this undercover operation.
This operation was kept as secret as we could possibly keep it. Not only was there very little information outside the United States, there was very little information within the U.S. law enforcement community. And there was a, at the height of the operation, when we were getting ready to conclude it, I would say globally there were maybe about 250 people, but that included people in, because this was an operation, although started in the U.S., it involved the U.K., France, and a few other countries, just a select number of people within those countries really had knowledge of it, and there was not much knowledge of it at all outside of that.
En Colombia nadie sabía de esta operación. Básicamente, esto era secreto, absolutamente secreto. Al final de la operación, sabían unas 250 personas alrededor del mundo, no solamente en Estados Unidos, pero en otros países como el Reino Unido y Francia. Pero pues, en verdad, era supremamente secreto.
¿Usted vio la película?
Sí.
Bueno, la película tiene solo una escena donde está Pablo Escobar.
Sí.
Que me llama mucho la atención. Él ve a Pablo Escobar pasar y le dice a otro compañero de él, le dice, ese que acaba de pasar ahí es Pablo Escobar. Yo quisiera que nos contara cómo fue ese momento en el que él vio a Pablo Escobar.
Mr. Mazur, we're talking about a scene in the movie where you see Pablo Escobar in a hotel in Paris. And you, in the movie, you mentioned it to your partner then, supposed fiancé. What was that moment like in real life for you?
Well, as I said in the beginning, the film is entertainment and not necessarily truth. In that meeting in Paris, Geraldo Moncada was present, but I did not see Pablo Escobar at that meeting.
Okay.
There were other people who were there who were very, very high ranking within the Medellin cartel, but not Pablo Escobar, to my knowledge.
No, no estuvo nunca Pablo Escobar, hace parte de la ficción, del entretenimiento de la película. El que sí estaba era Moncada y otros. Cuando él dice otros, ¿nos podría dar otros nombres de quienes estaban allá en París, en ese hotel, capos de Medellín?
Mr. Mazur, you said there were other high-ranking cartel people there. Could you maybe give us some names?
Well, I signed some records that were used to move money for Moncada.
Mm-hmm.
Moncada was there. There was a trip to to Germany afterward, and it was said that Eduardo Martinez was there. There were other people that I met with that are addressed in my book. So, but... I really don't know what else to add to that for you.
Okay. No, dice que está Eduardo Martínez y otros. Esta pregunta la tengo que hacer con mucho cuidado para no dañar la película. La escena más espectacular de la película es la última escena. La última escena de la película donde caen todos. Esa escena, y no voy a explicar en qué consiste la escena, porque es la magia de la película. Esa escena está en la ficción, ¿o esa escena existió en la realidad?
Mr. Mazur, the last scene of the movie is probably the most entertaining. You know, it's where all the big guys fall into the trap. And we'd like to know how much of it is fiction and how much of it is true.
Okay. I must say that originally, and you need to recognize at the time that I did this undercover job, I was with the U.S. Customs Office of Enforcement, and I was undercover for 2 years on this one. Later, I went to DEA and went undercover as a money launderer within the Cali cartel for 2.5 years. So, focusing on this one, the one in the book, I want to correct what was said in the beginning. at that time, I was a customs agent. And my superiors suggested that the case conclude just the way it is in the film, with a fake wedding. I refused to participate in that. I knew that it would be dangerous, that there would be innocent spouses and children, and it would probably turn into the mass confusion that you see in the film. Mm-hmm. So another way of ending it was designed. The night before the wedding, at a party, the men who were there were told that there was going to be a bachelor party for me that night, and that limousines would be picking them up. And so each of them got into a limo with people they thought were friends and family invited to the wedding. And then that was actually a part of their arrest team. Each limo went to about a half an hour away to a high-rise building in downtown Tampa and got off on different floors. And as they got off on the different floors, they were arrested individually. So in truth, it ended at a fake bachelor party and did not proceed on to the wedding.
No, también está en la ficción, pero de todas maneras lo que pasó originalmente fue apasionante.
Fue realmente apasionante.
Apasionante.
Es más, les mamaron gallo un ratico más, porque él dice que los montaron en una limusina. Ellos pensaban que
iban... O sea que, como termina la película, él se opuso porque dijo, hacer una fiesta, ahí va a haber niños, va a haber mujeres, y aquí va a haber una balacera, y puede haber un desastre.
Exactamente.
Entonces dijeron, no, más bien hagamos una fiesta de despedida de solteros.
Uh-huh. Exactamente.
Y en la fiesta de despedida de solteros los van manejando
los
con limusinas.
Ellos convencidos que se van a la fiesta de solteros, pero en verdad son agentes que los están arrestando.
Exactamente.
Y allá los arrestan.
Y ahí están arrestando a todos los capos de los bancos y a todos los contactos de ellos en Estados Unidos. ¿Cuánta plata le quitó él al sistema de lavado de... los carteles de México, Cali y Medellín? Él tiene ese cálculo.
Mr. Mazur, are you aware or do you have the figure of how much money you were able to remove from the cartels of Mexico, Medellín and Cali?
No, I couldn't tell you what the exact numbers are. I can tell you that in this particular case, what the fines and the forfeitures were. There was, in total, and of course this includes a big fine that was paid by the bank, but in total there was roughly about $600 million that the U.S. government recovered in forfeitures and seizures. There was at the bank, at the bank there were many accounts that were maintained for people within the cartel. There was about a little more than 3,000 pounds of cocaine that was seized. And of course the bank itself was dismantled. It lost all of its assets and no longer continued to exist. So, I can only speak to that, those numbers. There are other numbers that relate to the subsequent operation, but I don't know them.
Olvidé decir algo que él aclaró. Él antes de estar en la DEA fue agente de aduanas, customs. Uh-huh. Eso lo quiso aclarar él antes porque quiere ser muy preciso. Él no tiene muchos números, pero esa operación, en esa sola operación, fueron $600 millones y 3 toneladas de cocaína. Pero además se cayó todo un banco.
Exactamente.
¿Cuál fue ese banco?
El BCCI, que ya le digo, le cuento. El Bank of Credit and Commerce International.
Yes, it had a presence in 72 countries and more than 500 branches worldwide. It was the 7th largest privately held bank in the world.
Okay.
Estaba en 72 países el banco,
¿no? Exactamente, era el 7º banco más grande privado del mundo.
Y él lo acabó.
Y él lo acabó.
Con esa operación, él es el responsable de que se haya acabado ese banco y que sus cabezas terminaran en la cárcel, en esa operación de Tampa. Quiero preguntarle a Robert por su compañera en la película, que hace el papel de su novia, que es falsa porque el señor era casado, tenía una familia, pero para poder seducir a estos capos apareció con una rubia espectacular. ¿Eso también está en la ficción o eso es de verdad? ¿Tuvo esa compañera él?
Mr. Mazur, in the movie we see a fake fiance. She was part of the undercover operation. You know, she's very beautiful. And we'd like to know as well from this character, is she real? How much of her is fiction?
The way that the female undercover agent was introduced into the case in the film mm-hmm. is pretty much accurate as to what really occurred. I was at a men's club with money brokers from the Medellin cartel, and they tried to make a lady who worked there available for me for the evening, and I told the money broker that I didn't mean to offend him, but he needed to think back to before he was married and when he was dating his, when he was engaged to his wife and how in love he was. And that's where I was, and that I was engaged to be married. I needed to come up with some quick answer because otherwise there was a compromising situation that was beginning to develop. So when that happened, we had to get someone within the Customs Service, a female agent, to pose as a fiancé. And so subsequently, the leaders of the agency found someone in Miami to play that role, and then that female agent played that role for the remainder of the undercover operation.
Es muy real la manera en cómo aparece esta mujer.
Accurate, dijo, ¿no?
Exactamente, o sea...
parece mucho a lo que pasó.
Exactamente, o sea, el episodio de cómo llegó a esta mujer jugar un papel tan importante es muy parecido. Él estaba... a él le ofrecieron una compañía, digamos. Él dijo que no porque tengo un fiancé. Uh-huh. Y a la agencia le tocó buscar a alguien...
En un club de adultos, ¿no?
Él estaba en un club de adultos.
En un club de señores.
Exactamente.
¿Y ahí aparece esa mujer?
Pues aparece la mujer que después lleva a que aparezca la que pretende ser su prometida. Porque él niega, él dice, no, yo no puedo porque estoy comprometido. Y entonces cuando la agencia se da cuenta que el hombre se ha inventado, que tiene una prometida, entonces le tienen que buscar una prometida dentro de la agencia, y ahí viene a nacer este personaje.
Una rubia espectacular.
Sí, una rubia espectacular. Muy bonita.
Félix, es como si estas historias no se acabaran, ¿no?
No, claro.
Sí, vuelve y se repite lo mismo.
El otro
es que
día...
Este golpe, la película la están dando en Estados Unidos.
Sí, Félix, sí, sí.
Este es un golpe violento. Dicen que es el más duro que recibió Escobar.
Sí, sí, sí. El otro día había incluso un artículo en un gran periódico. Es la obsesión de Hollywood con Pablo Escobar. Sí.
Félix, le escucha Robert.
Pues a lo largo de toda la conversación él ha dejado algo claro, es que una cosa es el propósito de entretenimiento que tiene la película y otra cosa es el propósito que tiene el libro. ¿Qué tanta realidad sacrificó la película por el entretenimiento?
Mr. Mazur, when we were talking about your book versus the movie, you say that your book, it's more about facts and the movie is more about entertainment. So how much entertainment is actually the movie versus the book, and how does the book reflect the reality more than the movie?
You know, I haven't measured how many scenes are taken directly from the book and how many are fictionalized. I can just tell you that there are certainly scenes that the filmmakers took the liberty of creating because they felt it was appropriate. My book is my effort to tell as precisely as I could what it is that occurred. So it's impossible for me to measure, you know, how much of it is of the film is directly from the book or not. It would just take someone to watch the film, read the book, and you could figure it out yourself.
Bueno, nos dice, ustedes tienen que hacer el ejercicio de leer el libro, verse la película y descifrar qué tanto se difieren. Dice que sí hay escenas que definitivamente son sacadas del libro, pero pues que bueno, también en la película los directores han tomado la libertad de hacer unas escenas porque así debía estar la película y por motivos de entretenimiento.
¿Cómo hace uno en el oficio de él para que la mujer de verdad le crea que la otra y las actividades que se desarrollan no lo llevaron a tener un romance o un enredo por ahí con alguna persona.
Eso está en la película, Alberto. Eso está en la película. Es importantísima esa pregunta porque la respuesta le va a fascinar, Alberto.
Mr. Mazur, we're wondering about this kind of triangle that developed between you, your wife, and your fake fiancé. How did you manage to have your wife believe that you were not in any way involved with your fake fiancé?
There was no need for me to have to convince anyone of anything.
Muy clara la respuesta.
No tenía que convencerla de nada. Y ella le hace esa pregunta uh-huh. a él en la película. ¿Usted está teniendo algo con este señor?
El
señor no necesitó sino mirarla. Y le dijo eso. Yo no tengo por qué convencerla de esto.
Exacto.
Pero es que, Alberto, para complementar su respuesta, a la novia falsa le toca ir a la casa de él a pedir el vestido con el que se casó. Y ella recoge el vestido en la casa de él, se lo entrega a la esposa de verdad. ¿Dónde está el vestido con que usted se casó con él? Necesitamos ese vestido.
Me quiero mover un poco de la película para hablar del narcotráfico actual. Cuando hablamos de narcotraficantes en Latinoamérica y el Caribe, estos siempre tienen un nombre y un apellido, algo que, bueno, no sucede mucho para los narcotraficantes de Estados Unidos, que casi nunca sabemos su nombre. Yo lo que quiero saber es a qué se debe esto.
Mr. Mazur, moving on a little towards today and what's going on today. You know, when we talk about cartels in the Caribbean or Latin America in general, we always hear big names. But when it comes to the U.S. and maybe their corresponding figures in American territory, we don't really hear any names. Why do you think that is?
I'm not sure I follow that. You don't hear any names of...
We know famous people in South America like Pablo Escobar, Nahuel Chapo. There's always like these big figures appearing. But there is no such figure, say, in America. So we'd like to know why that is. Are there no figures like these in American territory, or are they hidden? Why do you think that is?
An American capo.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, certainly there are. And clearly there are people who are of American heritage who've lived here in the United States for many generations who have been prosecuted and whose names are prevalent. Maybe you don't see them in your media as much as we see them here. But there has been a long string of individuals who have been prosecuted. But I think that one of the things that's most important that the American public needs to face is something that I unfortunately didn't really want to accept as I was working within the cartels, where I would always hear, you know, if there was no demand, there would be no supply. I don't consider that to be an excuse. But I can tell you that I really do believe that it would be extraordinarily helpful if, in my country, we began to recognize the importance of education, treatment, and economic opportunity to those segments of our society that are most plagued by this illness, this sickness of using illegal drugs. And I think it's extraordinarily important for us to face where we are today and to recognize that there are more illegal drugs available today than there were decades ago. And if we focus exclusively on the supply side, without a balance of also at the same time focusing on the demand side, this problem is never going to get any better. There's going to be another Pablo Escobar. There's going to be another El Chapo. It's going to continue to happen. It's important for the U.S. to attack these organizations, to disrupt their command and control, and not have them with a continuation of leadership. And so I think it's extraordinarily important what we do on the supply side, but we need to open the other eye in our head and recognize the importance of an equal attack on the demand side.
Mm. No, Astrid, definitivamente hay personajes acá que son muy grandes y que se les captura y que son se van a juicio y todo. Pero bueno, él nos lleva a un punto muy importante, y es que él habla del tema de la demanda. Él dice que este cuento de que mientras haya demanda, el negocio siempre va a existir. Sí, es verdad. Eso era algo que, digamos, él no quería aceptar mucho en ese entonces, cuando él estaba infiltrado en esta operación, pero que hoy en día lo reconoce. Y que mientras es supremamente importante atacar el lado de la oferta, el lado de la demanda no se puede dejar a un lado. Eso tiene que haber un balance, porque siempre va a existir. Y bueno, es principalmente eso lo que nos dice.
Quiero volver de alguna manera a la pregunta de Alberto, del trabajo de un infiltrado. Y más allá de la relación con la mujer, le preguntaría, ¿el infiltrado llega en algún momento a tener cierta empatía, amistad, con esas personas a las que está infiltrando, o la llega a entender de alguna manera?
Mr. Mazur, when you were undercover in this mission, how much were you able to sympathize with the cartel people, with the bankers that you brought down? How much did you see yourself as their friend?
I wouldn't say that I sympathized at all. But I did see them on many levels. You know, I got to know their families. I got to know them not only as drug traffickers, but also as husbands, as fathers. And because of that, you know, any human with a heart is going to recognize that when the arrests occur, it's going to have an impact on innocent people. And so in that regard, I certainly had sympathy and felt that it was extremely unfortunate that some people who were not involved in this, children, spouses, suffered. And it's unfortunate. But unfortunately for them, it was their spouses that created that problem. Mm.
Bueno, él en verdad no le tiene ninguna simpatía o empatía a las personas que pertenecían al cartel y a este negocio del tráfico de drogas. Pero si hay un elemento, que son las personas inocentes que de alguna u otra manera estaban relacionadas o atadas a estos personajes que trabajaban con el cartel. Es el caso de niños, es el caso de esposas, que a él le parece muy terrible que estuvieran pues involucrados, que se vieran enredados en esta operación y que se vieran afectados por eso. Yo le tengo una pregunta al señor Mazur, y lo que pasa es que, digamos que estas operaciones de alguna u otra manera pueden llevar a que los carteles o el negocio del tráfico de drogas evolucionen para evadir esta clase de operaciones. Y bueno, ¿cómo será que hoy en día ha evolucionado el tema del tráfico de drogas para evadir estas operaciones que pueden implicar un obstáculo muy grande en su negocio? Mr. Mazur, these undercover operations might force cartels to evolve, to sort of adapt around them. So I'd like to know today, how do you think drug trafficking, the business of drug trafficking, has evolved, and how is it so difficult to attack?
Well, I think there was a business decision that was made by the Colombian cartels when the extradition to the United States was reenacted. I think at that time we're talking about the early 1990s. I think at that time they recognized that it was, from a business perspective, wiser for them to sell more cocaine, on a wholesale level to the Mexican cartels and let the Mexican cartels, basically do the dirty work, in getting the drugs to market. They do that because of a relationship the Mexican cartels have with Latin gangs that are well entrenched within many of the major cities in the United States. So in that respect, it has changed some. But the fact of the matter is that these criminal organizations are stuck with the same problem today that they had 25 years ago, and that is that their consumers pay with $5, $10, and $20 bills. And that's where the problem begins, because the mountains of cash, and I do mean mountains of cash, need to be laundered. And there are many, many things that I believe that the U.S. and other governments could be doing to more effectively identify who's laundering that money.
Bueno, una de las principales cambios, digamos, que pasó fue que las rutas de la droga, cómo llegaba la droga a Estados Unidos, cambiaron. En los noventas, los carteles en Colombia, o los mafiosos, o los narcotraficantes en Colombia, se dieron cuenta que el negocio era demasiado riesgoso exportarlo directamente a Estados Unidos, entonces que lo iban a hacer a través de los carteles en México. ¿Por qué los carteles en México? Porque los carteles en México tienen alianzas y contactos con, digamos, estos grupos criminales latinos en ciudades grandes como Los Ángeles, Nueva York y demás. Entonces era más fácil, digamos, exportar la droga por ahí. Sin embargo, se enfrentan al mismo problema al cual se enfrentaron hace 30 años. Y es que esta droga se paga con billetes de 5, 10, 20 dólares. ¿Eso qué es lo que pasa? Que lleva unas montañas enormes de dinero, de billetes, y el problema es cómo van a lavar ese dinero. O sea, cómo van a hacer ellos para que ese dinero no levante ninguna sospecha. Entonces, pues tal como su vida lo ilustra, es muy importante atacar el dinero, y no solamente la droga, sino perseguir el dinero.
I'd like to add something, if I can.
Sure.
Yeah.
What I'd like to add is that I think the world needs to take note that there has been another player that now has joined the Mexican and Colombian cartels, and that is terrorist organizations. Mm-hmm. Hezbollah, Hamas, Al-Qaeda, all have been shown clearly in the last 5 or 6 years in cases that have been publicized, one of which is the Juma case. Ayman Juma, J-O-U-M-A-A, a Lebanese Colombian gentleman who was involved in the movement of $500 million worth of in drug proceeds and 300 tons of cocaine. Monies in that case were traced to accounts used by Hezbollah in connection with their terrorist activities. Mm. And so as we see many nations in Latin America so dramatically affected, like Venezuela, Guatemala, Honduras, and nations in West Africa, like Guinea-Bissau, Togo, Benin, Mali, Ghana, whose governments are being corrupted, we are standing by as these criminal organizations continue to grow and, unfortunately, influence otherwise fair governments by corrupting the leadership. And this is a problem that needs to be addressed much more aggressively than it has in the last, in the recent past. And then I'm going to have to say that I maybe have a few more minutes after this, and then I'm going to have to go.
Sure.
Last question, la última pregunta.
If they can share that.
Sure, I will.
Él le ganó la guerra a Moncada. Pablo Escobar mata a Moncada. La policía con los Estados Unidos mata a Pablo Escobar. A Pablo Escobar y a Moncada lo sucede Don Berna. Don Berna está extraditado en los Estados Unidos, pero la oficina de Envigado sigue operando. Mejor dicho, la pregunta concreta es, después de todos estos golpes, ¿hay más droga en el mundo que nunca? ¿Considera él que la guerra contra las drogas se perdió?
Mr. Mazur, we just want to fit a last question because we know you have to go and then we'll translate everything. But, you know, basically the story goes, you were able to defeat Moncada and eventually Moncada gets killed by Pablo Escobar. Then Pablo Escobar gets killed. His successor, Mr. Berna, then comes to light. Then he is extradited to the U.S. In the end, it seems like this... there's more drugs than ever in the world. So, in your view, have we lost the war on drugs?
I refuse to say we've lost because, I mean, I wouldn't want to give up on things like world peace and a cure for cancer. and this is one of those major battles that we need to continue to fight. But I do believe we need to be very honest with one another. And I think we need to look in the mirror and take a look at where the problem or how the problem really exists. And that's why I've said before that I think it's time for my country to look in the mirror and recognize the critical piece to this problem, which is the massive demand for illegal drugs. Mm. And we need to be doing constructive things to offer education, treatment, and economic opportunity to the people who otherwise turn to this disease. And so, yes, things have gotten worse. Do I want to give up? Never. Do I want to shine a light on the active involvement of the international banking community in the success of the cartels? Yes. Do I want to keep talking about the destructive power of the cartels? Yes. But I want to include in the conversation a need for an awareness and a plan in the United States to reduce the demand.
Robert, thank you very much for your time, for your book, and now good luck with your movie. Are you still on the road? Are you still working in cases?
Working on cases?
Yeah, as an undercover agent? No.
No. Oddly enough, I was asked a while back if I would consider going back.
I think your wife doesn't like that idea, huh?
I think you might have a point there. So, and I don't think I like the idea either. It's time for another generation to pick up the torch and run.
Okay. Thank you very much. Good luck with the movie.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Se va, Robert.